Hey everybody, it's Tad Hargrave, and welcome to week five. I can't even believe we're here on week five, but week five of the Marketing 101 for Holistic Practitioners and other folks. And so last week, we focused a lot on this question of who's your ideal client, who's the perfect fit for you, and we talked about big circles and little circles, big circles being the broad category of generally who do you want to work with, and the little circles being the more workable kind of target markets that you could potentially focus some particular projects around. And out of that came this idea of the niche project. So making a project that's just about one niche, something to experiment with, to get some movement on, to try actually applying some of these marketing ideas in the real world. And easier said than done. Lushui is needing the phone number. I don't have that right in front of me. If somebody can post that, Lushui needs it, just put it in her comment, that would be great. So, God bless you, Tim. Right on top of it. So the feedback was, Michelle said, my brain cells hurt from processing so much, vulnerable putting it out to the group, appreciating the generous feedback, reevaluation, everything. And same as Yanina, niches I'm excited about working with are big. So this is something that I noticed came up for me. The difficulty of making it small is realizing that any niche project is essentially going to be a part of a larger sales funnel. So your niche project might be a pink spoon, it might be the ice cream cone, it might be the bucket, it might be an ice cream cake, it might be the ice cream club. It can be any level of that. And what that reminded me of is how important it is, whatever our niche project is, whether it's a very high-end thing, Lucia came up with an extremely high-end niche project, there still need to be the other levels to either get people there or sort of where do they go after. So that was a real lesson that I got from watching this all happen. Barbara said, a little challenging. I seem to get confused about what's actually being asked of me. I think I get it, and then it seems I should have included more information than I did. Yeah, it's with marketing, there's always this challenge of how much information to include. And, do we make it really long? Do we make it short? I think the heart of it is clarity. Once we get the clarity, we can often do less. But even still, then, sometimes there's just a lot of information to include on different things. So, yes, challenging sometimes. Caroline said, I've been pretty busy finishing my book, but I did use some of the ideas we've been talking about for the back cover. Thank you. I have so many ideas coming up for niche projects, not much time to delve deeply. Cool. So Allison said, a little unclear about the difference between a niche project and a pink spoon. That was the same thing that that came up for me. Again, the niche project could be big or small. It could be the pink spoon. It could be the full meal deal. But again, whatever level we pick, if you pick as a niche project a pink spoon, I think it's just good to think about, okay, well, what would come after that and after that? You don't have to have it all figured out in advance, but I think it is good to give that some thought. Tim Emerson, lots of ideas, still gradeless, but helps be taking on a piece of this, not the entire universe. Oh, you don't have any grades. Tim, repost your thing at the top of the page and people can grade you. Cool. So, cool. It just generally seems to be going well, struggling to narrow down a niche to work with. Got it. Yeah, that's how it is. So I think you get the general idea. It's great to be able to have some of these niche projects, even though you'll be explicit and not exclusive. You can work with anyone. It's often helpful to have some kind of magnetic core that's going to draw in your perfect people, people you'd like to work with, or at least think you want to work with, and then it can draw in people around that as well, who maybe don't fit exactly. So this week, though, we're going to take it a step further. So whether you're ready or not. So to recap what we've done so far, we've talked about the three pieces, the platform, the container, and now we're going to talk about the paths. So again, the platform is what you're known for. It's that sort of internal clarity that creates the external clarity. It's what makes our business authentic or not, I think, is our platform. Then we talked about the container. How do you actually embody that platform? How do you build it? How do you make a boat that's so compelling that people see it and get it, and that is safe for them to approach, but also sustainable for you long term? So it can sustain your livelihood. And so all of this is great, but then how do people actually find the container? How do they find you? It's great to have a really beautiful, well-made bucket that is never going to leak, but if you don't have any faucets or any way to get water, there's no source of that, then what's the point? You've got this beautiful bucket you can show off, and you can't use it for anything, and you can't get water, which you need to live. So when we talk about the paths, we're talking about the kind of the water faucets. We're talking about you've built this beautiful cabin in the woods. How do people find it? You're hosting this amazing theme party. You've got your place decorated to the nines. Do people have any invitations? How are they actually going to find your party? And one of the things I want to say, and I may have said this before, was how Weight Watchers, they have this thing about what's the best form of exercise for weight loss. There's one that's proven to be the most effective. And their take on it was that the most effective form of exercise for weight loss, hands down, is the one that you'll do. So it doesn't matter if walking or running or swimming are technically better. If you hate swimming because you almost drowned as a child, swimming is no longer the best form of exercise. And I want to submit that that is true for marketing as well. That the best form of marketing is going to be the kind of marketing you will actually do. Because I see this all the time where people will go to workshops and, you know, they'll have a focus on social media or public speaking are the best forms of marketing. And it's easy to get swept up in that, to feel like either, oh, I have to market in that particular, with that particular path, that particular approach, and I have to do it in the way that they're suggesting. And I think it's always great to learn from people. It's always great to see what you can pick out. But it can be dangerous when we start kind of putting on other people's clothing that does not necessarily fit us. because I want to invite the possibility that our paths need to be authentic too. That the paths should be in alignment with the platform and the container. You know, it's like if you, you're marketing some green product, but the way that you're marketing it is not green, you know, it's obviously not going to be a fit, and it's going to trip people up. So that the whatever our platform is, our point of view, why we're doing it, the bigger cause it's about, I think our marketing can be an expression of that. You know, if you were doing workshops about, I don't know, how we're all equal and how hierarchy is the devil, and and you did an intro workshop to promote it, and at some conference or something maybe, and you jumped up on stage and you were above everybody talking down to them, and they never had a chance to interact with each other, and you didn't take any questions, that may not embody equality in the way that you're talking about. So we want to find a way that our marketing can actually be an expression of what we're doing. So I think there are two steps here. One is figuring out fundamentally what are the paths that we want to pick that resonate the most with us. And number two, what is the way we're going to do it that feels just right for us and that feels perfect for us? And again, it's really wise, I think, and very smart to learn from other people. Who've done this before, but not to just swallow it whole. I had a friend of mine who went to a workshop that was all about how to do these big presentations, intro workshops, and sell a high price package. And so she did it, and she did it just like they said. It was a lot of this accelerated learning stuff, high-five your neighbor, kind of forced interactivity, getting them to say yes a lot, get some buy-in. And then at the end to say, you know, here's this package, it's worth $1 million, but today I want to drop the price to only, you know, half of that. And for you, tonight, why not, for the first 7 people that sign up, you'll get this. So she did this presentation for her close friends, and they were all appalled and shocked. They're like, what happened to our friend? Where did she go? and she'd gone right into this kind of posturing of doing what she thought she needed to do. So the best kind of marketing is not going to be collapsing, but it's also not going to be posturing. So with all of that, I would like to let's use the Facebook wall a little bit. And so when we say a path, we're talking about a way that people could find you. Yeah. So I'll give a few examples, but I'd love to have you share what do you know could be a path. So one example is public speaking. You know, that's a way that people can find out about you and your work. Writing, networking, these are all ways. Placing ads, those are classic ways people could find you. So I'm wondering, what else do you know? Let's do a brainstorm of what are the different tactics or strategies that you can use to make it really easy for your clients to find you, because that's the core issue here with the path. The platform is about making it clear and authentic. The container is about making it safe and sustainable. The paths are about making it easy for them to find you. Yeah? So let's take a couple of minutes and let's just do a brainstorm. What are all the different potential paths that you know of how people could find you? These are great. These are great. Keep it coming. I invite you to read each other's too. Feel free to comment or add any thoughts you have to that. Let's take another minute or two. One more minute, just get everything you can think of. What are all the different approaches or tactics? You know, if a friend of yours was a holistic practitioner and they just said, I want to know everything, what else could I do that would work? Because they're just trying to get a sense of what's possible. What would you say? Like, well, here are a bunch of ways that you can spread the word or make it really easy for you to be found. You are all awesome. These are so great. Yeah, so keep them coming. I'll keep talking, but feel free to keep posting. In fact, throughout this call, if something I say or somebody post triggers something, please share some more ideas. So here, let me just read what we've got so far. Articles and community newsletters, social media, guest post, interview, article. Google or Facebook ads, being interviewed on podcasts or radio, getting involved with local clinics, spas, offer free services to those who are working there so they're aware of what you do, knocking on doors randomly. That's funny. Tim Emerson said, excuse me, ma'am, do you need an aura cleaner? as a matter of fact, so sponsor an event. Get involved with things you already love to do, create more community, offer spot clinics on a regular basis. Allison, if you can maybe comment below that to clarify what a spot clinic is. Free webinar on an associate's email list. Good old flyers. Friends. Having a newsletter. Other professions within your niche. Or professionals within your niche. Banner hanging off the back of an airplane. Yep, it can work. Being neighborly as you move through life. Meetup groups. Website articles about your service published in places that your kind of people read. Flyers at places where your people hang out. Word of mouth, flyers, social media. Just want to make a note about word of mouth. Run a contest, a game, a treasure hunt aligned with your container and platform. Awesome. And I think a few more have just been added. Coupons with a related practitioner. Host an advice column, being good at your work and being authentic so that people are moved to refer to you. I'm also trying to exchange skill with others, coaches, so that professionals could recommend me. These are all awesome. Really nice stuff. So here's something I want to lift up is word of mouth. Let's have a little conversation about this because word of mouth is and has always been the dominant force in marketing. 50% of the reason that people make purchasing decisions they do at least has to do with, they heard from a friend recommended it. 25% of all conversations are about products and services, and not in a weird corporate brainwashed way, but just in a, hey, I went down to the new deli down the street and I tried their pastrami sandwich and it was delicious. We talk about, what we do as we go throughout our lives. And so word of mouth is absolutely the dominant force of marketing. And yet, when I ask most people, how do you market? How do you get clients? At workshops, hands go up and they say, well, word of mouth. And I want to distinguish between two different types of word of mouth. There's active and there's passive word of mouth. And 99% of the time when people say word of mouth, what they mean is passive word of mouth. What they mean is, I just try to do a good job, and I hope people talk about it. Active word of mouth is where we get a little more strategic about it, and there are three levels of active word of mouth. Level one is very much online with what Deborah said. You've got to make it remarkable. If you want people to make remarks about what you do, it actually has to be remarkable. You've got to take them where you promise to take them. Whatever your island B is, whatever the result is, whatever the thing is that they're craving, you need to deliver that. And ideally, over-deliver. Whatever it is that they're coming to you for, you deliver and possibly over-deliver. And there are four kind of levels that we can work on with our promises. The worst is where you over-promise and you under-deliver. And we all have friends like this. They say they talk big, and not only do they not deliver what they say, they really screw it up. We don't want to be there. If you overpromise and underdeliver consistently, it'll just kill your business. Level two is you promise and you deliver. Man, if you do that consistently, people trust you. You are solid. You deliver. You know, you say, oh, you'll be there on time, and you're there on time. We'll get that report done for them next Monday. Next Monday, the report's done. If you can do that consistently, it blows people away because it's so rare. And there's a challenge with the level of promising and delivering, which is that if that's all you do, it can be kind of stressful. because what it often doesn't take into account is the just life. And we often, I think we can do more than we actually can. And so, yes, we deliver, but we end up having to burn the candle at both ends. Third level is we underpromise and overdeliver. So if we think, I could get that for you by next Monday, we say Wednesday or Tuesday. And we, you know, ideally get it to them on the Monday, we deliver. And we not only deliver what we said, but maybe a little bit more. They not just get the report, we give them a muffin with the report. I don't know, something extra. We do a little extra analysis with the report. So if you can consistently, or at least weave this in of an under-promising and an over-delivering, people are so happy and delighted that you went the extra mile for them. I had I used to, when I get workbooks printed for my workshops in Edmonton, there was this company called College Copy in Edmonton. And I would go to them all the time because they would always, consistently, they would under-promise and over-deliver on the timing. They would always say, oh, it's not going to be done for 6 hours, and then it'd be done in like 2 hours. And what's great is there were a few times where it was done right on time, but I knew it's like, oh, if they say that time, that is like for sure going to happen. It's probably going to be sooner. But I felt really good, like they were protecting me and my own expectations to make sure that I knew that it was going to be other time and that I could rely on them. And that had me feel so relaxed and taken care of by them. And there's a fourth level that I got from a guy, Thomas Leonard, who wrote an amazing book called The Portable Coach, which got re-released as The 28 Laws of Attraction. One of the best books I've ever read on how do you create a lifestyle where where the things that you want come to you more effortlessly. It's not a new age book at all. It's very practical. Brilliant stuff. The 28 Laws of Attraction by Thomas Leonard. And he had an idea of whenever you can you promise nothing but still deliver? So at this point, it's like working with clients and they're not expecting anything, but all of a sudden they get an extra treat. They get an extra bonus that they weren't expecting. People are so delighted by this. It's like one of the best experiences of customer service that I ever had was at a restaurant called Greens in San Francisco. It's a high-end vegetarian restaurant, if anyone's ever been there. Great food. And this waiter we had, my friend Ali and I went, and we ended up giving him like 100% tip or something. Like, you know, the bill was like $60, and we left $120 because we were so amazed. And I was eating a vegan diet at the time. I think she was vegetarian. So everything we were ordering was vegan. And he just noticed that. Didn't say anything. But then the next time he came over, he had a little bowl of, like, here's some vegan bread I thought you'd like to try. Here's some vegan soup, a little sample that I thought you might want to check out. And it was constantly little gifts that we weren't expecting. And we just left so delighted. We ended up writing on a napkin this big, you know, we love you note. Each of us, like, wrote on half of the napkin and left him this epic tip. And it just felt so good. And isn't that amazing? I not just like, we didn't just give him a tip. We felt so good to give him a tip. So when we talk about word of mouth, that first one, be remarkable, is just that. We delight them so heavily that they just like, they're thrilled to give us the money and they're thrilled to tell their friends. They want to. Word of mouth works because it's independent. Yeah, it's not a bribe, which is the trick of some of the marketing tactics where, you know, come to this free talk and your friend gives you a free ticket, but then you find out that your friend got paid because you were there. It's like the timeshare philosophy. And that can work. It can be effective, but I think it also starts to damage trust in the community where people don't know if things are being recommended because they're getting a commission or not. And George Kao, K-A-O, one of my colleagues, had a brilliant insight around marketing. He talked about sustainable marketing. And that sustainable marketing is all about the question of, like, if everyone in the world marketed their business in this way, what would the impact on the world be? If everyone in the world marketed their business in this way, what would the impact be? So to me, it's like if all the marketing in the world was basically bribing people to talk about us, there would be no trust. You would never be able to trust a recommendation from a friend because you know they'd be probably getting paid. So that's why word of mouth works, is because we're not paying anyone to do it. We're delighting them. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a street performer. I wanted to be a busker. I go to the street performers festivals and all the time. And they're an amazing example of this, because they do their whole show and they don't get paid until the very end if they're good. And so their job has to be to delight you if they want to get paid. And if they want to get paid really well, they better really delight you. So that's the first one. Be remarkable. There's a great book written all about this idea called Purple Cow by Seth Godin, G-O-D-I-N, Purple Cow. And he was driving through France, and I guess they didn't have a lot of dairy cows in the States where he was, but he was so excited to see all these dairy cows. I'm like, wow, there's a cow. And after a while, it all started to blend in, and he stopped even noticing them. And I thought, isn't this funny? I was so excited half an hour ago, and now they're just part of the landscape. And it's the same with our businesses. You know, when people maybe first come into the holistic world, they're like, ooh, holistic practitioners, all these people doing this amazing work, and they're excited. And then there are a lot of other people doing it, and we just blend into the landscape. And so Seth Godin, as he was driving, he thought, man, if there was a purple cow, I would notice it. And this is always the question. How do we become the purple cow that people notice? So that's the first thing. And this is where I think niche projects can be really useful, is because they do stand out. They are so relevant and can be so resonant. And it's the constant question of how do we make our business even more and more authentic for us? And the boat so clear and such a purple cow kind of boat, so different that it jumps out. That's number one, be remarkable. Number two, make it easy. We've got to make it so easy for people to spread the word. So I have a client, their business is crystalcradle.ca. They make amazing jewelry. I'll post their link here. It's like a crystal with like copper wiring, and the crystal has a little LED light behind it that when you flick a switch, it lights up like purple. Anyways, I get tons of comments on it when I wear it. People want to talk about it, ask me about it. And so that's great. It's remarkable. Check the first box. But then their website used to be electronic-ouroboros.com. So people would say, well, who made this? I say, oh, my friend Dylan Toymaker. And they say, oh, wow, that's really beautiful. Where can I get it? Do they have a website? I say, yeah, it's electronic-ouroboros.com. And they'd be like, oh, how do you spell it? So what's electronic? Dash or Boris, and then I'd be like, and that's spelled you know, and it was that for 5 minutes, and I usually misspelled it. And of course, if they lost that piece of paper, they're screwed. So now they've changed it to crystalcradle.ca, much easier to remember. So a simple URL, a simple website name that's memorable and easy to spell, very helpful to make it easy. Think of bands. Like if you wanted to tell a friend or expose a friend to a band that you really like, you just, you know, maybe you just came across the band Mumford & Sons and you're like, man, I love this band so much. And you want to spread it. What would you do? Well, you could buy the CD at the store, mail it to them, but that's hard. You're not going to do that. So what do? You go to YouTube and you find a video of theirs, you click the link and you forward that to them. So a little video can make it very easy to spread the word. Sometimes making it easy is about creating opportunities for the conversations to come up. I wasn't thinking I was going to share this, but this is such a funny story. So in Calgary, there's a company called Urban Mortgage. They're a mortgage company. And the way that they here's a great example of sort of not promising but delivering and creating so much delight and creating a circumstance that almost not forces, but the conversations are going to happen. So what they do is their best clients every 2 months get a box of a dozen Crave cupcakes. So, you know, those fancy cupcake stores where the cupcakes are like $20, but they're worth it because they're so good. So they would get a box of these delivered by courier in a really fancy box. And so, you know, Frank gets his box. Frank never gets anything at the office, but this courier comes in with a box and delivers it to him. And all of his colleagues are like, Frank, what did you get? Frank says, cupcakes. And they're like, somebody sent you cupcakes by courier? He's like, it's my mortgage broker. I don't know why he does. He just sends me cupcakes. And but he's got a dozen, so he can't eat them all himself. So he's like going around the office, being the hero, giving out these cupcakes. And you better believe the second or third time this happens, his colleagues are like, I want your mortgage broker's card because I want cupcakes, you know. So that makes it very easy for the conversation to happen. And of course, then it's like, what's the pink spoon? What's the next step? Is there something he could give them to help them talk about it. So we want to make it remarkable. We want to make it easy to spread the word. We want to make it easy to find. And with the making it easy piece, I want to suggest that the more paths that you have leading to your little cabin in the woods, the more invitations that go out to your party, the more people are going to show up. Think about it like a table. If a table only has one leg, it's not usually that solid. The more legs it has, the more solid it is. Fundamentally, though, you need just three legs to make the table basically solid. Every leg after that is sort of icing on the cake. So as I'm going to go through all these different particular approaches that you can use, I want you to be thinking about which three stand out the most to you. So there are 10 that I usually go through. The list may grow because you threw out some really good ones too. And so I'm going to give you 10. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to quickly go over them, and then I want to talk about an approach that can like literally double, triple, dextuple the 10 times, get you like way more response basically on any of these. not uncommon to see this get quite two or three times the response. Sounds like hyperbole, but I think it'll make sense when we get into it. So, 10 things. First of all, there's writing. And there are a lot of ways that could go. Presenting. There's networking. There's creating community-building events where you just deepen and foster community beyond just the actual work that you do, which I would consider to be more of a container issue, the actual quality of the work, because the paths are them just about finding you, not working with you. There's social media. There's hosting events. There's advertising. There's PR. There's virtual presentations. And then there are free sessions. So those are the 10. I know I went through those really quickly, but we'll go back through them. And this is a call that is going to be rich with specific resources and links to check out, and where I'm going to be inviting you to share what you've come across for each of them, and we'll take them one at a time. But before we go into that, what was I going to say? So there are three kind of levels that marketing can work at: the cold, the warm, and the hot level. And I posted this article. I think some of you might have read it. But just to recap, the cold level is where you're a stranger. This is where marketing is kind of like Cheers, the old TV show, except nobody knows your name and nobody's glad you came. So at this level, you are you're a stranger, you're an unknown commodity, and you're trying to get business. You're doing cold calls, you're knocking on random doors, it's just hard, this kind of cold approaching people. This is where it's like you send a mail out to a certain postal code, they don't know who you are, and only like 1 or 2% response rates on that kind of stuff. Consider that, 1 or 2% response. That's low and not a sustainable thing. The warm level is where we start thinking about hubs, and this is one of the core topics of conversation today. You start thinking about who's already connected to the people I want to be connected with, and could they introduce me? So, for example, I went to Ottawa last fall, a year and a half ago. I'd never done a workshop there, and yet, with about 2 or 3 hours of my work, had 100 people sign up for 2 different day-long workshops, so kind of 50 people each day, and I did very little work. How did that happen? I did a workshop in Toronto, and one of the people who was there said, you should talk to a woman named Heather who runs a business called Planet Botanics, Botanics with an X. And Planet Botanics is this hub. It's a holistic center, and this woman, Heather, is very well connected and respected in the holistic scene. She saw my website, The Container. She liked it. It resonated with her. She'd heard something from a friend, which of course helped. And so she decided she was going to host me, and I said, I'll give you $25 per person who shows up. She was like, that sounds great, and we did it. And the end result was 100 people signing up, again, with like almost no effort on my part. So the warm level is this idea of hubs, and extremely important. The hot level is where you become a hub. And to think about it like this, at the cold level, it's like you're putting out 10 units of effort and you get 1 unit of reward. You work so hard and yet you get so little in return. Not sustainable. The warm level is where it's at least a 1-to-1. You put in a bit of effort and you get a little response, or you get an equal response, 1-to-1 at least, often more. The hot level is where you put in 1 unit of effort and you get 10 units of reward. Obviously, that's the place to be. So when we're looking at this idea of the paths and making it easy for people to find us, hubs are central to this idea. Either finding the hubs, well, both, finding them and becoming a hub. And so the third level of it is making it worthwhile for people to spread the word. If that's going to be a business-to-business relationship, my take is it's appropriate to do some kind of affiliate or commission thing. Business-to-customer, if you're trying to get your clients to spread the word, making it worthwhile to me is all about delighting them even further, thanking them when they spread the word, just acknowledging it. And it doesn't have to be over the top. Probably shouldn't be over the top. Can make people uncomfortable. But just a little, hey, thank you. This person signed up because of you. I really appreciate that. Letting them know that you notice. Dan Kennedy, who's a brilliant, very gruff kind of marketing, curmudgeonly marketing coach, he had an accountant who was brilliant. He loved him. And he referred all this business to this accountant, like 12 clients who all became amazing, high-paying, awesome clients. And Dan Kennedy never got any acknowledgement of that. No thank you in person, no thank you card, no thank you email. 12 clients. And he's like, I can't refer to them anymore. I want to this person. I want to refer them business, but he's like, I know it's petty because he's really good, but I can't do it. So we want to make it worthwhile. We want to acknowledge people when they have spread the word. Whether it's acknowledgement or there's some reward, there's something in it for them to spread the word. And remembering that most of what makes it worthwhile for them to spread the word is it makes them look good. You know, they get to be a hookup of a cool thing for their friends. So sometimes the best way we can make it worthwhile is taking such great care of their friends that their friends come back to them and say, thank you so much for spreading the word and letting me know about this person because I had such a great experience. Thank you for telling me about the restaurant because it was such a great restaurant. Thanks for introducing me to that band. They're now my favorite band. What a movie you took me to or told me to go to. That movie changed my life. So it's kind of a loop. It gets back to that being remarkable. So these three levels of marketing, cold, warm, and hot, what I see is that so much of what holistic practitioners do operates on the cold level. Most practitioners, when I look at their marketing, they've got a business card, which we'll talk about how to do that, a business card, a brochure, or and a fancy logo. And all this money gets spent on these things. And you can totally have a very successful practice with no brochure, no business card, no logos. Yeah, that's what most people do. And most of those, though, they're cold. They're functionally a cold thing. So this is the thing I want to invite you to start letting go of, is this even the notion of approaching people cold, I think doesn't necessarily serve us. So starting to build relationships with these hubs is where it's at. So here's a classic example of hubs to really make sure that we get it. So I'll do one example. I'm going to post something, and I want you to put the comments under that post. And then we'll do one with an example from the group. So we'll do an easy one that we all get. So there's a realtor in Seattle, Phoenix Rudner, R-U-D-N-E-R, and he was looking at where to focus his marketing. And one of the niches that came up as a sort of central one for him was dog owners, because he's a dog owner. He loves dogs. And so he thought he'd focus on that. Now, does that work as a niche? Let's think of the six niche criteria. Is it clear? Yeah, that's pretty clear. Are there enough of them who can afford? Well, let's assume in a city like Seattle, pretty temperate climate, a lot of dog owners. Let's assume yes. Are there hubs? This is the question. do they share the why, the point of view? Does he love them? He certainly loves them. And I think there's probably a certain point of view and why this gets shared by people who are just obsessive about their pets. So he's a realtor focused on pet owners. Now, so imagine that you are the crack marketing team that's been hired to help him find hubs. And again, this is the important question is not just like, where do you find, I guess the question is, where do you find pet owners? But not just in a cold level, but like, where do they already hang out? Where are they already spending their money, their time, and their attention? So I'm going to post this. So realtor focused on pet owners. What are the hubs? So let's just take a couple minutes. I want everyone to comment under that. If you were helping him trying to find these pet owners, instead of just walking down the street cold and asking people if they have pets or approaching pet owners and asking them if they're moving and trying to hope he runs into people, you know, going to random chamber of commerce business mixers and hoping some of them are pet owners. Instead of that, where could he directly find the pet owners? So let's take a couple minutes and everyone just pile on with your comments. Okay, so check this out, y'all. That took like a little while. We got a bunch. So let me read through these just to give you a sense of what's possible here. So dog park, vets, pet stores, off-leash areas, pet salons, dog shows, groomers, dog sitters, dog birthday party services. Apparently, Anina says this truly exists in San Francisco. Local car and dog wash, local pet chat groups. Awesome. This is so funny. This is stuff with most niches, there are worlds within worlds. Like if you're not a pet owner, you wouldn't realize there's a local pet chat group. There totally is. Dog beaches, kennels, the Icon has a cheeseburger local meetups, cute condos that may be dog friendly, the kitty litter aisle at Walmart, doggy daycare. There are potlucks for pet owners. There are meetup groups, dog rescue organizations, specific breed groups that are based locally, like Danes Are Us, I guess, is a group. What else? Dog trainers, dog magazines, the badrap.org, BADRAP.org, I guess, is one. Dog whisperers, dog psychologists, dog therapists. Thank you, Lorraine. Somebody once said to me at a workshop at pet cemeteries. I was like, yeah, great, great place to network for hubs at the pet cemetery. Yeah, so awesome. So you get the sense. These are all hubs. These are all places that people could go, or this realtor could go to start building relationships with people who already have an existing relationship. Can somebody tell me, did I talk about marketing like being like baseball? Is that a thing I've talked about? I can't remember. Somebody tell me. because I'm going to if I if I haven't already. If I have, just let me know. Yanina, thank you. You know my stuff. Yanina says, Lorraine says, tell us anyway. Yeah, Yanina says I already have. Let me do the recap, because it's useful in the context of Hub. So it's the idea that marketing is like baseball, that you have, you're at home base, you're a stranger. First base is clarity. First base is they get what you do. They understand it, which for most holistic practitioners is a minor miracle, that people get what you do. So that's first base. Second base is they trust you. They're like, hey, I like you. You're my people. Third base is sort of an excitement, a general agreement, a sense of like, ooh, I want to work with you. I want to book a session, but they haven't done it. yeah, so first base, second base, third base, and the home run is they actually pay you. And so most of us approach it thinking like, I want to get home runs, which is really hard. And home runs are really hard. And especially when you're doing this cold, it's extremely difficult. Because then you got to get first base, you got to get second. That's a long process. But I want you to consider what happens when there's word of mouth, when there's a referral, when a hub, especially somebody who's really well connected and respected, says you should go check out this person. First of all, when the hub describes it, they're probably going to make it very clear to their people. So clarity is reached, ideally. Trust is imported because this person said you should trust it. And then the excitement, people kind of either, as soon as something's endorsed by a hub, they're usually immediately at second or third base. Yeah, so they're already there. Then it's just a matter sometimes of timing for people to take the leap. Tim was saying he has a lot of people at third base. If you have a lot of people at third base, what it means is you need to come up with some really compelling offers, because sometimes it's a matter of timing. Sometimes it's pricing, and sometimes it's relevant. Sometimes it's like, oh, I'm excited. I like you, but I you know, it doesn't feel like there's an immediate thing, which is where the niche projects can sometimes like come in and do huge things. Because sometimes you have people who are like, I like you, I want to work with you, but I can't see it. I can't see where I fit or how that's going to happen. So yeah, as soon as we import hubs onto this, it's like we skip all those bases. We just kind of land on second or third. Sometimes home run. Sometimes that's all it takes is people trust somebody enough and they say, go buy this book. And they just go and buy the book. Book a session with this person. And they just go and they book the session. So, yeah. Let's see. Okay. So, I'm going to invite... let's see. I'm trying to think who in the group we should use as an example for the niche thing. Who's got a little circle that you would love some help on with hubs? First person to post, we'll do a jam on. Let's make sure it's a really good, tight little circle that you got high grades on, not the one you got 3 and 4 on. If somebody's got a little circle, feel free to repost it. Hustle. but part of the homework will be brainstorming hubs for each other, so don't worry if we don't get it right now. Okay. Let's see. Who's up there? you all with your sass. How do you get hubs to trust you? That's a good question. We'll get into that. Okay, well, Jennifer was the first to say pick me. So, Jennifer, share with us your little circle. All right, Jennifer, you got 30 seconds. Ta-da, here it comes. Okay, so divorced, separated women, who are, is it, and they're struggling with getting over that? What's the island aid? Just give us a few words about what the problem is. And I think it's in Ottawa, if I recall. So just give us a few more details. And what we're going to start doing is thinking about hubs. Where could she find them? Where are places that they're already spending their time, their money, or their attention? This is the question. So you can start generically. Don't write anything yet, because let's get a little more detail. But think about it. So divorced and separated women. A woman who's just gone through a divorce, is separated. Maybe actually give us that clarity. Did she just go through the divorce? Is it years later? All right. So it's at the top of the page here. Okay. So divorced, separated women in Ottawa, helping them. So I'm going to rewrite this so we can all comment here. So they're struggling in releasing their anger and their fear. Okay, so I'm going to post this. And feel free to put any clarifying questions and also any hubs. So let's take a couple minutes to brainstorm hubs. And this is where we'll start to notice the clearer that a niche is, the easier it is to come up with hubs. Okay, so it's posted. So let's take a couple minutes to ask clarifying questions, comment, discuss. Yeah, and put them under the under my comment. So it's interesting. Lucia raises the point of sort of this question, like, do they have kids or not? So that would definitely help affect the hubs. Do they have kids or don't they? So within that circle of the women who've gone through divorce, they're separated. We had smaller circles. One is maybe they have kids, maybe they don't. The age range, I think, is going to be an important factor here. So notice this. With this generic thing, we've actually already got a pretty good sense of the hubs. But the clearer sense we get of the niche, this is one of the main ways that I can sort of intuitively know how clear a niche is how easily do the ideas for hubs come. The clearer it is, the easier it is to come up with hubs, and the better the hubs. So let's just take 30 more seconds, add anything else you've got. Right. Tim makes the point that recently divorced women are usually not looking to date. They might just need some space from, you know, from a relationship. So that's a really good point. So this is why. Oh, Samia, said you lost sound. I hope you can hear me. But yeah, so notice that if we specify that they're recently divorced, there are certain places we're not going to look. If they've been divorced for a while, other places. So that's some thoughts about hubs. Yeah. So there, when we're talking about connecting with hubs, and we're going to go into these top 10 paths, we're talking about connect. We're probably going to go over time on this call, by the way, by the looks of it. I just want to make sure that you can hear me. Since one person couldn't, I want to make sure you're not all just sitting there listening in the dark. Okay, good. Thank you. You can all hear. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so when we're talking about connecting with hubs, there are three. I got this from George Kao, again, K-A-O. There are three things, three wins that need to happen for the hub. First of all, it's got to be, well, three wins in general. Think of it like a triangle. One is it's got to be a win for you, obviously, if you're going to do a partnership. It's got to be a win for them, but it's also got to be a win for their people if they're going to endorse you. So this is the main thing they're looking at. And I think it's important that it's a win for you, because if it's not and they sense that it's not a win for you, that's going to make people very uncomfortable. If they are like, well, what do you get out of this? Oh, nothing. I just want to serve. I just want to give. I think most hubs would actually, I don't know, some of them might just use you. I would feel personally really uncomfortable with that. So, yeah, so we want to do that. And there are a few things. Well, let me ask you this. I'll put it again to the group. Imagine this. So I'll post this here. So if you were a hub, and you are in your own ways, in your own communities, and someone approached you looking for support, and you basically supported what they did. You thought, hey, that's cool. I like it. That's the kind of thing I would love to support. What would be important for you that would make it more or less likely to support? What would make it more like, so hold, don't post anything yet. What would make it more or less likely? Okay, so 1 second, I'm going to post this and then comment. All right, go. And feel free to, again, read each other's stuff, comment, discuss. This is probably one of the more critical conversations that we can have in marketing, is how do you build relationships with hubs? So let's take a couple minutes on this. Okay, so this is great stuff, everybody. So I'm seeing there's a theme of you really resonate with them. You think they do good work. So let's move beyond that. Let's assume you totally resonate with them. You think they do good work. What can they do that is going to make it more likely that you're going to actually endorse them? Because you're busy. So what is in it for you to spread the word? Somebody comes to you, you're busy. Think about your life, all that you have to do. And yet they want you to go this extra mile to take the time to spread the word. You love them. You totally are like, I get you. You're the best. What do they need to do to get your actual, tangible, real-world support beyond just moral support? This is the core question when thinking about working with hubs. It's always like, what's in it for them? Yeah? What's in it for them? Yes, they might like you. There's the feel-good aspect of it. But if you're asking them to really go out of their way, there's got to be something in it for them. Let's take 30 more seconds, and then I'll share some of my thoughts on it. Okay, so feel free to keep tossing things up. Here's what I think is most important. First of all, is you want to make it easy for them. Make it so pain-free and easy for them. Allison, I think, hit a home run when she said, they write the copy for me to use. So, you know, if you're wanting them to send a letter, to send an email, to do a tweet, pre-write all of that for them. They'll probably change it sometimes, but they might just be busy. You did a good job. They're going to, you know, do it. So make it easy for them. I had a friend who ran a non-toxic hair salon, and her little, you know, counter, she'd put up business cards of like-minded businesses, and one lady brought her a stack of brochures, but no stand to put them in. And so it looked really ugly. She didn't want to just kind of drop them on the table where it took up all the space. And so she ended up never putting them up. We want to put ourselves in their shoes and think, okay, what am I asking them to do? And how can I make this as easy as possible? So pre-writing things is a classic example of that. I'm just going to share an example of something that I just did recently. So I'm in Victoria right now, in Victoria, BC, where it's beautiful and not the Arctic of Edmonton, where I just came from. And I wanted to invite some people to spread the word. And so I'll post this in the same chain that we've been discussing. So here's what I did. So I created all these emails. These were the people who signed up for my workshop, and I wanted them to spread the word. Because they're all kind of little tiny hubs, you know, if they're coming to my workshop, they're obviously connected to the holistic team. So I sent them something like this. Yeah. Simple things they can cut and paste and spread the word. Another example, and I'll probably put this up as a document, but I want to lift up the idea of a two-step email process. And the two-step email is that if you're reaching out to a hub, whether you've got a connection with them directly or not, or you just heard about them, if you reach out and you say, hey, here's who I am, please promote me, it's not that great. I think it's good to slow the process down a little bit. So, for example, when I came to Victoria for the very first time to do a workshop, I didn't know anybody here. And I called my friend Jackie Kanyuk, and Jackie was really connected. She gave me the names of 15 people to contact. I sent them an initial email, and that initial email basically said, hi there, Jackie suggested I drop you a line. There's a day-long Pay What You Can marketing workshop that I'm leading for holistic practitioners in Victoria coming up, and it's my first time doing anything here, and she thought you might have some good ideas on places to spread the word about it. Any guidance is so warmly appreciated, and no pressure. I'm sure you're busy. I hope your summer's going well. Tad. That's it. So you get the idea. Very low pressure, no assumption that they're going to help, not even directly asking them for help. I'll post that just right there in the same chain. So this was another example from Nelson that I did. I'm not assuming they're going to help. And what's interesting is there's an old adage that says, if you want money, ask for advice. If you want advice, ask for money. You know, somebody's like, I got to get $10,000. Could you give me $10,000? And they're like, oh, tell you where you get $10,000. Whereas if you ask advice, they tend to get more invested. And I find a similar thing with hubs. If you go for support directly, it might be a little presumptive. But if you just say, hey, this person said you might have some ideas. I'm not asking you to support, but I thought you might have some ideas, people to talk to. They're often, but the response I got to this email so often was, this sounds great. Send me the info and I'll spread the word. And I didn't even ask for it. But I think it was, there's a graciousness in not going for the direct ask right away, but just presenting it. And of course they know if they, you know, they know they can spread the word on it and they'll let you know. So one is make it easy. Number two, really think what's in it for them. I'm talking money, referrals. I don't think it always has to be like I refer to you, you refer to me. It doesn't always fit in that way. But really do think what can make it worth their time. Yeah, so that's what I have to say about that. So let's talk about these 10 paths I keep mentioning. And I'm going to make a note. I'll post a document with some more of those emails to give you examples. Oh, man. Okay, so I'm going to go through them one at a time, and as I go through them, I'm going to put a little comment here. So the first one is writing, and so you'll see that. That's one. So path number one, writing, in all caps, shaman. So as I'm going through this, if you have resources that you think are relevant to this path, like maybe coaches or ebooks or websites that can help people use writing as a tool of marketing, I want you to comment below. And so let me say this. So writing is such a powerful path for marketing. And we're talking blogs, ebooks, articles, writing an actual book. All of those are really powerful. And they're powerful because they give people a chance to really learn about you, learn about your point of view, your approach, get a sense of your vibe and your style in a very safe way. A lot of people love to read. So again, if you're the kind of person who loves to write, you're writing a lot anyways, consider this as a marketing path. When you write a book, you become an authority. Something about it in this culture, you are an author, you are an authority. So ebooks, special reports, white papers, the blogs, gives people a chance to peruse you. And consider that with writing, like I have my own blog, and that's okay. Like I've become a bit of a hub in some ways, but posting your articles or blog posts on other people's blogs might be just as, if not more powerful, in terms of the warm level of directing people. Writing an article in not just any newsletter, but the right newsletter. If you're the realtor focused on dog owners, writing articles for pet owners, in a newsletter that they read. So it's all with all of these, you're going to hear this hubs theme come up again and again and again. So here are a few resources. And actually, let me just sort of cut and paste these under. These aren't all people I know personally, but they're all people I've heard good things about from my colleagues. Yeah, guest post on popular blogs, for sure. Okay, and so here are a bunch of resources if you're really interested in writing as a particular path. I post them. Oops. So check out all those websites. Yeah, writing a book can be really powerful. Having something out there that people can spread around and share really useful as a way for people to come across you. Presenting, number two. All right, so and again, if you have resources for any of these workshops that you think people should check out, don't worry if it seems like it's competitive with me, just share the good stuff. Presentations. So when we talk about presentations, we're talking about talks, intro workshops, could even be online video blogs, it could be that, etc., day-long workshops, seminars, all that kind of stuff. So there are a few resources I would check out. So let me post this one here, and I'll collect all of these and put them into the transcript as well, so you don't have to scroll through here forever. One is a colleague of mine, Callan Rush, from Edmonton, from Canada. Not all Canadians are Edmontonian. And the other one are some friends of mine from Santa Cruz, rejuvenateyourpractice.com, Jesse and Charlotte, who are lovely people. And I'll put that link there too. So those are two resources of people who are coaches who specifically help people build their business by doing presentations and creating workshops that they can sell. I don't have the same style as them. Callan and Jesse and Charlotte, they do a lot of accelerated learning. Probably Callan more than just a lot of sort of high five your neighbor, tell your neighbor they're great. Getting the audience to repeat after you. There's a whole philosophy around it, which I just disagree with. It's not my style, but they do have some really great things to say about marketing and how to build workshops and presentations. And if this is something that's exciting for you, but you're kind of nervous about it, you don't know how to put it together, awesome. They're great to check out. Here are my thoughts on presentations. I think there are three main things with presentations that matter. The first is the topic or the title, which is why this niche project and having a really clear sense of who it's for matters. So the topic and the title matters more than anything. Having a workshop title that's like Reiki, not that compelling, unless people are into Reiki, or Succeeding at Life 101, not that exciting. Something like Callan Rush is a great one, How to Fill Your Workshops with Ease. That's the title. How to Fill Your Workshops with Ease. My colleague Max Simon had one called Sold Out Seminars. great. Titles that really specifically nail. So if you can think of a title of a workshop that really grabbed you, I'd invite you to post that. A title that just made it so clear, like, this is the journey that this workshop is going to take me on. This is the Island A, the Island B. You'll notice that the best workshop titles are usually not about the boat, unless it's a brand new boat that everyone's really excited about and you're the only one in town doing. So the title and the topic is probably one of the biggest things for me that's going to have people make it easy to spread for your hubs and for your friends and make it compelling. The second thing, again, is partners and hosts. And there are a couple of ways to to think about this. So when I went to Ottawa, I filled all those workshops because somebody else hosted it for me, and they filled it, and I then compensated them financially for that. I could never have done that on my own. So if you can have somebody host your workshops or host an intro for you, it's amazing. When I was doing some nonviolent communication workshops in Edmonton, I knew like yoga studios would probably be a perfect fit to host me. So I went to them and I was like, why don't you just keep all the money? And the truth is, at that point, I was just apprenticing and I felt like I've still got so much to learn. I didn't feel right taking money for it at that point because I was really green in it. And so I just let the yoga studios keep all the money. That's probably still a smart idea if I'd had like a full weekend or 10-day thing that I was trying to get people signed up for. Letting the yoga studio keep all the money is probably going to motivate them a lot more to get people there rather than, hey, I'll just pay the rental fee. So when you're thinking about partners hosting you, really think about it strategically of like, depends how big the back end is. But if the back end is big enough, why not let them keep 100% of the front end? Yeah, you don't have to, up to you. But consider that if you're really wanting to get numbers. I can tell you I'd be a lot more motivated if I was running a yoga studio and my life was so full and I had so many things on the go and somebody was like, hey, I'll give you $25 per person who signs up. You know, and I'm like, wow, I've got a bunch of people who are probably interested in that. Really easy for me. You've written the copy for me. You've created the poster for me. It's all done. All I have to do is basically cut, paste, click send, and I can make like $600. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, so you can either get somebody to host it, but also think about partners. And this can be a really powerful one. There was a company in California, Moondance Paints, and they were a eco-friendly painting company. And they knew, they were one of the first ones, and they knew that if there were so many people, if they knew that there were these eco-friendly paints, they'd buy them. But what are the paths? How are people even going to come across them or find them? So here's what they did. They partnered with the local Whole Foods and a green landscaper, green interior designer, and green architect, I think. And they did a green home series. They made it very easy for Whole Foods. They used their space, and they all promoted each other, and they all did really well from it. Nice little niche project. Another example, there was a client of mine who had a cloth diaper company, and she was like, well, you know, nobody's going to go to a workshop on cloth diapers, because they're either into it or they think it's gross and disgusting and they're not going to. Probably true. But what if you did a workshop on natural parenting? What if you broadened the category just a bit? You'd probably get just like a lot of folks. You know, because you could have somebody doing infant massage, how to feed your baby healthy food and make healthy food for your baby. You know, a parenting coach being there. Lactation specialist to talk about breastfeeding. There's so many things you could do and weave together. And then the cloth diapers just fits into it. So if you, something that you're like, ah, this wouldn't be a good workshop, I bet you you could come up with a partnership thing where you could be introduced. And of course, the key thing is you're all promoting that workshop together. You're all working together to get to promote it to all of your lists. So the first thing is the topic of the title. Second is to think about partners or hosts. And the third, so critically, is the follow-up options. I've gotten so lazy about this in the last little while, but really powerful to do it. So I had a client, and this is the sales funnel. I had a client in Red Deer who did a presentation. He used to do appreciative inquiry work, and that's the boat. Again, nobody cared that much, but he did a workshop in a conference. And he called me up and he said, Tad, he said, I did this workshop. It was so good, but I got so little response. And I had like nobody booked. I got no business from it. I said, well, tell me more. He said, it's just the strange thing. It was like, it went really well. The energy was so good in the room. And I found out in the evaluations afterwards, I was ranked as the top presentation in the entire conference, better than the keynotes. Everyone loved it so much. I was like, wow, well, what did you offer them at the end of your session? And then there was this kind of, you know, long pause. And then he said, oh, and, I was like, that's okay. Well, you can still email them with an offer afterwards. And again, another long pause. Oh, so you're not, yeah, that's like, oh, you're screwed. Sorry. So it's really important when we do a presentation to be offering some next step, because it's easy to think, oh, I'll just do this intro thing and I'm going to just wow them and I'm going to give them all this content and not give them anything else. So you want to think about the follow-up options. And I really recommend creating like a half page, something they can fill out where they can put their name, their contact info, any kind of feedback you want, but also then where they can check like one of five boxes. Like, if you want this level, check this. If you want, you know, here's a free thing you can get. You know, if you want to be on my list, or if they're not already from being there, you know, here's a, like when I would do my intros for a weekend workshop, I'd say, check this box if yes, I want to attend the workshop. Check this one if it's a maybe, but you want to talk about it. Check this one if it's like no, but just keep me on the list. I love you. And another one was like, oh, I'd like to book a coaching session. And another one said, please remove me from the list. I love you, but you know, I'm just, it's not a fit. So give people the options of how they want you to follow up with them, because it's so different if they come to an intro workshop and then you try to follow up with them via email without permission versus they told you exactly what to do. So consider really naming the follow-up options anytime you do a presentation. And I got this from Jesse and Charlo with Rejuvenate Your Practice. The best time to start talking about those options is not in the last 5 minutes when everything's rushed, but if it's like a three-hour workshop, probably in the middle, you know, you take a break for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, come back, do some stretch, revitalization, you know, kind of exercise, something fun, and then be like, okay, let me take 10 minutes and just talk about this, what the options are, and then at the end you can give out the forms for them to fill out. But don't try to cram it into the end. For me, I'm a classic, as I'm doing right here. You know, we're at time, and I've got so much more to say, and so I would always do that where I try to fit too much in, and then I would collapse. I'd basically sacrifice my own offers to give them more content. So don't do that to yourself. Make sure you fit that in. So the topic, the title, the partners and the host, and then the follow-up options. Those are the three key things. And so that's presenting. That's number two. So number three is networking. And I have got some thoughts on networking. including business cards and stuff. So, again, networking. If you've got any comments or thoughts on networking, or what makes effective networking or not, please post them here as I talk. Okay, so networking. Networking, basically, you're going out to events to connect with other folks who are either in your industry or are hubs for you. And how do we do this? So first of all, I'm more introverted than most people, I think I am. I can go to these events and I can do it, and I can be a little exhausted after, depending on the event. So a few things I want to suggest. Number one, go with somebody else. Go with a friend, because a friend is going to be able to talk you up in a way that you can't talk up yourself, and you can rave about your friend in ways that they can't. So if you go with each other, you can be kind of networking for each other is a really fun way to do it. Number two, I got this from Bill Barron, a B-A-R-E-N, brilliant guy. And his thing was, don't go networking for clients, go networking for hubs, which I think is one of the most brilliant thoughts I've ever heard on it. Don't go networking for clients, go networking for hubs. When you think about events, you're going to get strategic about networking. Don't go to the events where it's just, oh, it's just going to be a bunch of my clients. But you want to be like, where are the people who are connected to lots of my clients? And go to build connections with them. Especially when we're talking about networking in person, you don't need to get anything from them. Just having a little bit of FaceTime and building a personal connection does a ton in terms of the follow-up. Number three. Don't just get their card, or don't just give your card to them, get theirs. I see this all the time with networking. People go to networking events and they run around giving out like 100 business cards and it feels like they're accomplishing something, but I would say it's a false accomplishment, because of course most people are going to get home, have no idea who that they got 20 cards that night, and they just throw them out because they can't remember who it's from, you know. So I just got a business card a while ago, and I just want to suggest that the business cards aren't necessarily that useful. I do have some thoughts of, you know, how to use them or how to make them effective. But for years, for most of my career, I didn't have a card. People would say, well, hey, do you have a card? I'd say, nope. Do you have one? And they'd give me their card, and I'd make a note on it of something to send them, a pink spoon, a blog post, a video, something that I thought would be useful for them that starts the relationship off with giving something generous. and I would get their card. And then I would leave it the night with like 10 cards. And I want you to get that leaving with 10 of their cards that you can follow up with is a lot more powerful than giving out 100 business cards. Because people do this. They just go and they give out cards to everybody as if to say, hey, here's my card. Could you throw this out for me? You know, because that's what's going to happen. And number four, get a business card that works. So here's my thoughts, and I'll post some photos of my business cards after this call. But let me just make a note to do that. Photo of business card. So there are two things that I think are vital for a business card. Number one is having your personal photo on it, a current awesome photo. Because people get so many cards and they really won't remember who it's from. But if there's a photo of you, they can be like, oh, yes, that person. It helps more than you'd think. Number two, use the back of the card, which is usually blank, not for to set an appointment, but to give them a pink spoon, to give them some free offer of something. So mine basically is like, hey, are you a conscious entrepreneur who's struggling to get enough clients? Well, go to my website, and there's a ton of free stuff. At the bottom, there's the line. It's my website, marketingforhippies.com/free. So use the card as a way to direct them to some pink spoons. Nothing too heavy. You know, they can check you out at their own pace. Yeah. So there's that. Allison Chan says, introverts, shuddering. Yeah. So any thoughts on that, the whole networking piece? Feel free to post right now. Thank you, Deborah said, remember, it's just a path. You don't have to do this path. Totally true. Yeah, Seth Godin says having a photo is cheesy except for realtors. Yeah, I also disagree with that. Totally. Okay, can the pink spoon be a small amount of your service? It can, but... I think that's less pink spoony. Ideally, it's something online, audio, video, written, a quiz, and or email series, something that they can just check you out from a distance without having to book anything. Though it depends on the vibe. You might have a great vibe and just decide to go for the next level. Yeah, I don't know. A small discount on the service, to me, that doesn't give me a taste. It's not a pink spoon at that point. That's just like a discount. Lauren was saying, don't go networking for clients, go networking for hubs. Can you say more about this? Just to, like with Phoenix Rudner, this realtor, when you think about all those hubs, instead of thinking about just where do the pet owners hang out, he could think, where do all these hubs hang out? Are there places where all these hubs are together in one place where I could just go to one event and meet a bunch of folks? Much easier. Oh, Joseph, brilliant. Do one-on-one networking. Have lunch and coffee with people you already know. Oh, you're so ahead of the game. And just make your intention clear. I'd love to catch up on I'd love to catch you up on what I've just decided to do with my business, or I could really use some advice about blank. I'm looking to do some marketing. I want to talk to you about introducing me to your blank. Yeah. You know, sometimes if I'm going to meet with somebody, I'll just say like, hey, yeah, like we should go for coffee. You know, it seems like there might be a fit here of ways we could support each other. And I'm not sure what it is, but let's grab a quick 30-minute coffee sometime. And then you can have the one-on-one, more intimate conversation, which I agree is much better for introverts. yeah. Awesome. Lorraine just introduced the new verb, pink spooning. Nicely done. this is great. Awesome. And the thing is, if you go to an event where there are lots of people, what I'll usually do is then, if I think it's a significant kind of hub or significant connection, then I'll set up the one-on-one networking thing after that. But just, you know, you're already at events, you're already at parties and gatherings probably. So if you're going to do it well. Okay. So number four, moving on, is client care and community. Client care and community building community. So let's do another quick brainstorm on this. I know I'm going so over time, but I hope you enjoy. So client care and community. And by the way, if we get to in another 20 minutes, we're going to stop, and we'll have to continue on the next call. But what are some ways that you can build community? Put your comments under here that you've either seen or done that can build long-term, deeper community beyond just getting them to rebook for another session, which is important. But what can you do to build that sense of community around your business so that marketing actually becomes a force of community building? What are some examples of that? So let's take a couple minutes and just, what have you seen? And what have you done? What have you participated in? How can you build deeper community amongst your clients? Oh, you are all just brilliant. I love what you're coming up with here. So I'll just read some of these as you continue to think, maybe stimulate ideas. So host potlucks, support groups, using Web 2.0 social media, study groups in between, following up after a session to see how they're doing, remembering their birthdays, wishing them well, introducing them to other practitioners that you think might be of service to them, connecting them as in... It's like, hey, did you know that this person was talking about the same thing? Or these other people are interested in that too? Keep track of your people, their interests, their needs. Hook them up with each other. Helpful info. Create really intimate experiences in classes and programs. Writing in your newsletters in a style that is addressing the community in a way that you're holding everyone in it. Be a source of community information. Follow-up conference calls for programs, great. Provide space for them to meet online. For example, Ning.com, N-I-N-G.com, where you can basically create your own Facebook or a Facebook group or online forums. Volunteer at related events and comment helpfully on other people's websites. Create gathering spaces, either face-to-face or virtually, so people can build relationships with each other, not just with you as the teacher. That's kind of what's happening here. And structure it wisely, have a list of rules and agreements from the get-go for virtual communities, though you've all been very polite with each other. to make it easier to neutralize negative or unhelpful behaviors. If you have the time, invest in being a skillful facilitator for your community. Host a mini event, sampling services, give mini talks, monthly evening workshops, right, that they can come into. There was a chiropractor clinic I knew of in Calgary, and every month they'd host a new workshop on a cool topic for their clients. sponsor events like a dance or a ceremony or a gathering for blank kinds of people. Organizing some regular party or event where they get to know each other so it can become networking for them too and meet friends maybe. Make really good stuff available to them. A client referral that you don't want yourself for whatever reason, give it to a colleague or somebody else just starting out. Or if you have older products that you're discontinuing, just have a giveaway to your best clients. That's so great, Joseph. Have a free weekend every year. So Joseph runs a free weekend every year for his clients. Really nice. gifts like mixtapes. Totally. Yeah. Bill Barron sends out a mix CD every year. I think it's super classy. If it applies to you, some pro bono work is great for everyone and maybe the best for you. Awesome. You guys are amazing. So these are all the kinds of things that you can be doing to build and keep fostering community. This is where having your client database can come in really handy. I think it's also really good to figure out who your favorite clients are and to take extra special care of them because you want more clients like them. So in your database, if there's a way to organize that, can you do special things just for your very favorite clients? That keeps you in communication with them and that keeps you being able to give to them and contribute, can help foster that sense of connection with you. And can you introduce your favorite clients to each other if that's appropriate in your context? Can be really powerful. Yeah, awesome. Really nice work. Okay, we're going to do one more and then we're going to wrap. And next call, we're going to finish it up and we'll stay a little longer for Q&A. But hosting. We're going to get into next time, which is one of my favorite things. And I can't crunch it into 15 minutes. I've got a lot to say about hosting events. But let's talk about social media. So I have my thoughts about social media. But let me just post this here. Number five, social media. If you have any cool resources of social media coaches who you think people should get in touch with, because even though I kind of have my take on it, there are people probably way smarter than me. So if you have any thoughts on that, please post them up there, and then I'll share my thoughts, and we'll wrap up. So let's take a couple minutes to post any ideas, leads you have of cool. If somebody's interested, like, I kind of like the idea of using Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, or whatever. yeah. Post it now. Okay. Seems like we don't necessarily know a lot of good coaches. George Cow is great as a social media coach. Unfortunately, he's kind of slowly getting out of the business of doing that. If you have any other social media coaches, I'd actually be very curious because my well has sort of dried up on people who I refer to. So the main thing with social media, think of social media like this. I'm not going to tell you how to think about it, but this is how I think about it. So when you watch a TV, Well, TV stations, TV channels, networks, they make all of their money from ads. But the reason that those businesses place ads is because there's a big following. A lot of people are watching the TV shows or watching that particular network. But why are people watching that network? Because the programming is so good and people want to watch the programming. So this is where it all starts, is having good programming, good content that people want to come back and be watching. You know, there are some people who are on like Facebook and all they do is they post kind of negative complaining stuff about their life, Farmville, et cetera. And those people tend to be ignored. So part of it is making sure that there's a sort of this almost like a 10-to-1 ratio I've heard on social media, which makes sense. 10-to-1 being for every 10 things you post that are just cool, useful, relevant, one can be a shameless plug for what you do. So it's being seen as a source of good stuff, a hookup of cool things, a curator of really nice content. Facebook seems to have made a number of unfortunate changes, but part of what's happening is when you post things, at least on the profiles with the timeline, now photos and images seem to be prioritized and get a lot of response. So you might consider doing that if you want to promote an event. Instead of just putting the link to it, I'd consider putting a photo with it because it seems to be helping with it showing up. But yeah, sharing cool, useful things starts to build an aura around you, a sense of who you are. People get it just from what you post. They're like, oh, you post really cool things that all seem to align with my point of view. The first time I ever met Bill Barron and his business partner, Patrick, I'd never met them in person before. And they were like, would you like to write a book together? And that was 100% because of what they saw me post through social media and the impression it gave. And they were like, Tad, you post the coolest stuff of anyone I know on social media. And I get that from a lot of people. So posting really interesting, cool stuff that's relevant to your folks, that expresses your point of view, awesome. And but I'd be wary of building up a Facebook and Twitter following only. I think the point is you want to get them on your email list. Yes, Tim just said that. So one thing I think is really important that I've not set up myself is to get an email newsletter sign-up form to the Facebook group page. It makes it much easier to build your contact list. This is really vital because as powerful social media is, I use it. I get people coming to my workshops because they just randomly saw somebody post something on social media. Is building your own email list, because Facebook keeps changing things. Facebook used to be literally like 100 times more useful for me than it is now in terms of promoting things. They changed a lot of things. And I there's nothing I can do about it. But with my email list, I still have control over that. So, social media can be really powerful. Consider whenever you write a blog post, if you do that, posting it on social media. When you come across a cool TED Talk, share it there. A cool image that you think would resonate, share it. Anything that you think is cool, you're like the filter for your community. Paying for Facebook ads is a question. Beneficial or not, I really don't know. I think it probably is. I think a lot of people can get a lot out of it. Yeah, I don't know that much about it. I think with all of these paths, and maybe this is a good time to begin to wrap up, but with all of these paths, the thing I want to suggest is they all work, every single one of them. There's probably a way to use Facebook ads that will absolutely get you a ton of perfect clients. I don't know what it is. But with any of these, they all work. And that's the point, is to pick the one that resonates the most with you, that seems like it makes the most sense to you, and to start there. Thank you everybody for posting your cool resources. awesome. Yeah, so Barbara was saying she advertised on Facebook for months, only got one hit. Yeah, so I think they all work if we know how to work it. And do it the right way. You know, I've heard of like something like Groupon, people doing great with it, and other people just killing them. So, social media, very powerful path. let's begin to wrap it up. Next call, we're going to go into the remaining five, which is hosting, advertising, PR, virtual presenting, free sessions. And then we'll do a big Q&A to make sure that all the questions are answered. So I hope this was useful for you today. I'm sure your brains are kind of full. There's just a ton of content I know in this call. So as per usual, I'd love to get comments from people on what was the most useful piece that you got from the call today. Would be awesome to hear. So thank you all. I know we went way over time. And I look forward to connecting with you next week when I'll be in Vancouver and just having finished my weekend here in Victoria. I love you all. I'm so enjoying getting to know you over the 6 weeks. And I can't believe it's our last call next week. I'm feeling sad about that. But we'll make it a great last call. It'll probably go 2 hours, so you might want to book that off. I love you all. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.